Early voting is set to start Monday in Florida after the final presidential debate. The Duval County School Board needs to take a timeout after a contentious meeting. And leaked audio raises questions about what supporters of Amendment 1 hope to achieve. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9, and also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. And just ahead, it's all of the news of the week with our Friday roundtable. You can get on the line now and join in at 549-2937. Then later, Pretty Little Liars star Keegan Allen as he visits the Southern Women's Show, plus singer-songwriter Mary Chapin Carpenter. All of that ahead this morning. But first, it's Friday and time to look at the top stories of the week, a busy news week and a crowded studio as we welcome Tessa Duval, reporter from the Florida Times Union. Good morning.
Good morning.
Tim Gibbons, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal, with us.
Good to be here.
Claire Goforth, who edits Folio Weekly.
Good morning.
And doing a little tag teaming, WJCT's own Lindsay Kilbride and Ryan Bank.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for being with us, everyone. Lots to talk about this week. Everything from controversy over a solar amendment on the Florida ballot to more squabbling on the school board and more. But first this morning, early voting starts in Florida on Monday. Can you believe it? Including right here in Duval County, just days after Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton wrapped up their third and final debate. Amid claims of a rigged election, an incredibly nasty campaign. Yeah, that's a word getting used a lot this week. And more, we're going to begin the hour with a look at the campaign's final days. We want your calls at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show, weigh in on our Facebook page. And Claire Goforth, let's begin with you. As former President Bill Clinton visits Jacksonville today, appearing at the downtown Jacksonville Public Library, the talk across the land is this election as we get down to the final days. Just last night, the candidates met again at the traditional Al Smith dinner in New York to sort of roast each other. But even that devolved into a nasty back and forth.
Yeah, it seems that Donald Trump doesn't have a very good sense of humor about himself. Watching the debate the other night, I was impressed that he seemed far more subdued than he had in previous debates. Hillary Clinton repeatedly tried to draw him out and to get him to be as crazy as he has been in the prior debates, for lack of a better word. But when he said that the election was rigged and that he may not accept the results and then doubled down on it yesterday, adding the caveat, unless I win, I mean, I think that that is bad for our democracy. You don't want to undermine faith in our election process.
Tim Gibbons, prominent Republicans even decried that along with the moderator, Fox News's Chris Wallace. What about this sentiment among Trump supporters that if he loses the election, they will not feel it's a legitimate result?
I think that's something we've seen since the first election of President Obama, where you have basically a section of the electorate who doesn't see him as their president. I mean, you could argue that goes back to George W. Bush as well, though, of, you know, people who were not happy with the result. In that case, you did have the, obviously, the Supreme Court case that made things different. But you did have Al Gore basically standing up and saying once everything was said and done, he was going to accept it because that's what our democracy does. It's a hallmark of American democracy is the peaceful transition of power.
Yeah. Tessa Duval, it's what separates us from countries with dictators and authoritarian regimes where power is seized violently.
You know, it doesn't really matter at this point what Republican leaders decry when Donald Trump does it. It doesn't matter what he says about women or minority groups. You know, if the Republican establishment comes out against him, that's really just something that makes a lot of his supporters dig in even more, that he's different, that he's an outsider. And so the fact that he says he may not accept the election outcome results and that Republican leaders are saying, hey, you can't really do that. It doesn't really matter to some people. Their minds are very much made up about their candidate.
It's 549-2937. That's right. Most voters' minds are made up. Lindsay Kilbride, Ryan Bank, Donald Trump, until the controversy over him saying he might not accept the election results, scored a lot of hits on Hillary Clinton in that third debate. His performance was much stronger in this final debate when it came to the actual issues at stake in this campaign. What about that?
I mean, I would sort of I would sort of kind of disagree with that. I would say that he had a stronger showing than the last two debates for sure, but I would still say that that was up against a Hillary Clinton who kind of seemed over it by this time. She was kind of matching him tit for tat with the aggression, with the one-liners, and she actually, in my opinion, it was her best debate performance as well. I think there was one question, one back and forth about the TPP that I think really hurt her, and about her emails. She sort of did the DNC pivot to Russia every time you're asked about the WikiLeaks emails. When they're asked about the specifics behind what was said, they immediately pivot to Russia. So I think she looked weaker there. But I think even many Republicans the morning after were very disappointed with that debate performance. And although she wasn't able to goad him as much as she was the first two debates, she was still able to kind of raise his temperature.
It's interesting to see, too, Lindsay, that these debates have made a difference. And I can't remember a recent election, maybe going all the way back to 1980, where the debates really made a difference in the polling as we get closer to Election Day. They've been so closely watched, and they have shifted some votes.
Yeah, I mean, people are really watching these debates. I think this is one of the most interesting elections we've had in a really in a while. And you know, that's hard to say considering, you know, we thought Barack Obama, you know, that was such a different thing for us, you know, as our first African-American president. And so now we have these two candidates who people really there's a lot of hate for both of them from the different sides. But you're right. It's very interesting that people would actually change their vote. And there are undecided voters because they are so different.
Absolutely. And if you watched any of the debates or you didn't, we just want your calls on the election. Early voting starts Monday, by the way, in Florida, here in Duval County and other big counties around the state. Are you going to vote early? Give us a call at 549-2937. Claire Goforth, of course, the voter registration deadline was extended by a judge in the wake of Hurricane Matthew. Governor Scott initially said he thought people had had enough time to register, but the Democratic Party actually and some other Democratic-leaning groups filed a complaint to extend that window of time. That has resulted in something like 64,000 new voters in the state as early voting gets underway.
Yeah, the Democratic Party seemed to believe, probably quite rightly, that by extending the deadline, they were going to do a good job at driving voter registration turnout. And it'll be interesting to see what happens in Florida this election and where which way the state goes. I mean, we've been saying for years that Florida has far more registered Democrats than Republicans, and yet voter turnout tends to be heavily Republican, and so that's how the Republican Party keeps carrying the state. This year, that may be different because Donald Trump is divisive as he is, and has such a rabid fan base, he does have a lot of detractors as well who are equally as passionate.
Tim and Tessa, it will be fascinating to see which way Florida swings this year, although the polling shows Hillary Clinton up on Donald Trump in Florida. I think that the election cycle has been so volatile that Florida could go either way. What do you think?
It all comes down to voter turnout. I guess all elections come down to voter turnout, but in this case, you particularly have a Hillary Clinton campaign that has a great get-out-the-vote ground game sort of thing, and a Trump campaign that has a lot of very energetic supporters. And you know, the entire point of a get-out-the-vote campaign is people who like your candidate but aren't enthusiastic enough to actually, you know, get off the couch themselves and go and vote. You know, I think Trump voters, if you look at his rallies, they're definitely motivated to go out and vote. Would that be enough?
Absolutely. Tessa, who will be more enthusiastic getting to the polls? And will some of the comments, particularly the one in the debate the other night where Donald Trump called Hillary Clinton a nasty woman, that's become something of a feminist battle cry now. Is that going to bring in female support to her campaign, which she, I think her campaign has had trouble struggling with all year until these closing days?
Yeah, you know, I think the nasty woman comment, people who are riled up by that comment are probably already pretty solidly in Hillary's camp. I think it's fair to say you're not going to wear a nasty woman T-shirt if you probably aren't already with her. And I really think that if, you know, the comments about grabbing women and things of that nature hadn't already pushed those women away, they probably weren't going to be put off by that.
Now, I do hope that afterwards in the polling, you know, they typically break down the black and white vote and men and women. I do hope they have nasty women and hombres. As
bad hombres. Bad hombres. Bad, yeah. Which term do you like better, nasty woman or bad hombre? Call us up. 549-2937. Let's start with Ed in Orange Park. Hi, Ed. Good morning.
Yes, hi. I wanted to say that it's unfortunate that we have a choice between an individual who seems to be unable to control his mouth. I guess he hasn't mastered the art of the BSing, which is every politician. I guess you can tell he's not a politician. And it's just one thing after the other that comes out of his mouth that is unnecessary. And then we have somebody on the other side who seems to be unable to stop. He was very good at the art of double talk, as we have shown by the WikiLeaks emails. And unfortunately, by the way, Bill Clinton coming here, which is interesting, one thing that Trump could have said was to bring up when it came about the taxes, how the Clintons deducted his underwear, used underwear, as a tax deduction, which is perfectly legal. You can Google it.
Deducted it underwear? Out.
Youth underwear.
Youth underwear. Term. Okay. Well, youth so Ed, let me Ed,
Clinton, yeah.
Let me ask you. Who yeah. will now? You've called the show before, and you've given your take on this stuff. Who will you vote for?
Well, I'm going to vote for the weaker of the two, which is Trump, because as you have mentioned in your show many times, which is true, Trump has a problem with both the Democrats and the Republicans. So if he ends up winning, he's going to be more likely to be stopped by the Congress. Versus Hillary, which basically is going to have 100% of the Democrats behind her, and probably a lot of the, not most, well, probably most of the, if not all of the Republicans. So you pick the weaker of the two choices that we have. It's a shame that 300 million people, we couldn't come up with two better choices. I think that Melissa Ross would have been better.
No, not at all.
It's not too late.
Write her in.
No. I would rather walk on my lips over broken glass than run for office. But thanks, Ed. Steve at the Beaches. Hi, Steve. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to lighten this up for one quick second and say that there were two moments in the debate where... the writers for Saturday Night Live, kudos to them, because at one point it looked like the Alec Baldwin skit where Donald Trump interrupted Hillary and went false or
wrong.
Wrong.
What, yeah. Yeah, and it was one of those deals where I caught myself going, is life imitating art or is art imitating life? Because it was so close.
Yeah, the skits this season, I mean, have been priceless. You're so right, Steve, and thanks for pointing that out. It has been absolutely entertaining and uncomfortably close to the real people.
I know. It's almost as if they just act straight. It's just as funny as if they try to be caricatures of the candidates.
Yeah.
But the previous caller made an interesting point that we've talked about a lot over the course of this election, is that a lot of people are really disappointed in the two choices that they have. They're very, they're opposed to Clinton, they're opposed to Trump, they want a better candidate. And I think that you're starting to see more and more people getting fed up with the two-party system.
I would agree with that. In fact, on Twitter this morning, there is a trending topic, Johnson 9%. That's Libertarian candidate Gary Johnson.
The third-party candidates, though, always tend to trail off a bit as we get actually down to voting, because everybody dislikes the two-party system. But when it comes to actually deciding what you're going to do, particularly if you're in a swing state, people go, casting a protest vote. I'm not saying that all third-party votes are a protest vote, but for those who are, it becomes less of a viable idea.
David is on Beach Boulevard this morning. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hello. Okay. Well, I'm definitely for Hillary, and I don't think she's that bad a person, and I'd probably be a very good candidate. She's doing a smart campaign. But one of the things I'd like to make sure is that under local politics, you start watching the way we're handling the liberals versus Democrats. I mean, liberals versus conservatives. We're getting too many people going to jail for no good reason. And we had 8 years where the state attorney and the public defenders were cronies. We had a public defender who gave back his money to the state, bragged about it. If you don't take cases, you don't spend money. If you hire hacks and kids right out of law school, you don't spend much money on them either. And that's what we had. That's why we had the highest incarceration rate in the state for no good reason.
Yeah, thank you for that call, David. Tessa Duvall, you've been reporting on this issue, in particular when it comes to the incarceration of juveniles. And certainly our local criminal justice system has been held up to the microscope and criticized quite a bit. We do have new people in office now. What are your thoughts?
You know, I think a lot of people are really excited about this change in the state attorney's office and the public defender's office. I mean, we've had documentary crews following around, you know, our both sides of the that aspect of the criminal justice system. I mean, there was a crew, I believe it was from Vice, who was baffled that Matt Shirk gave money back, because nowhere else could they find someone who said, no, we have too much money to defend people accused of murder. I mean, that just doesn't happen. And so
public defender's offices are so well funded. I mean,
yeah, I mean, that's just what you hear everywhere. It's just they're, you know, rolling in money. So I think that, you know, you really got to give credit to the local voters who turned out. They really were paying attention. And I'm not saying, you know, give credit to them for ousting one candidate or supporting another. It's just they were paying attention and they really were, I think, thinking critically about these issues.
Let's go to John in San Marco. Hi, John. Thanks for holding. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you very much. The debates were very interesting. I haven't seen anything this fun since Adams and Jefferson. This is John Hancock calling. I would love to.
Go ahead.
This is one of the best shows in Northeast Florida, but here's my question. After Clinton wins and she gains seats in the Senate and in the House, do you think locally some of the more Tea Party Republican type officials like Curry and Ronnie Fussell will shift at all in their positions and become more reasonable?
John, thanks for the call. Of course, this is a Republican leaning area. Most of the candidates standing for office, Lindsey and Ryan, are that are favored to win are Republicans. And so when you look at the politics of the First Coast, this corner of Florida, it tilts more conservative than, say, the I-4 corridor, which is where the presidential candidates are trying to get the advantage.
I guess it depends on depending upon what side of the aisle you're on. Reasonable has a different definition. So I want to throw that out there before I say anything else. But I don't think it's going to affect how politicians, local politicians in Northeast Florida, conduct themselves or govern themselves. I think we're gonna keep seeing the same kind of types of rhetoric The only thing that might change is the Donald Trump style rhetoric might be toned down, especially if he loses in a landslide. I mean, if it's a shellacking, he's not. I mean, his brand of politics will sort of have lost, and I don't see too many people sticking on the train for too much longer after that. But other than that, I don't see a change.
I don't know if the professional political class, I can see them jumping off the train, but the idea is this is a brand that, or an idea or an approach that just really touches people deeply. And in some ways, it's the old Confederacy idea of, you know, you've lost, and that actually makes you grasp those ideas even more. We have a story coming up looking at money flows in politics, and the Jacksonville is the 25th in ranked contributing cities to Trump. So, I mean, it
what's number one?
You have to buy the Business Journal and find out. But that idea that people here, you know, were a Trump-friendly area, and I don't see that changing whether he wins or loses.
Let's go to Diane in Palatka now. Hi, Diane. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I'm a flip-flopper. I am a Democrat, and I changed to be a Republican to vote for Trump, and I did in the primaries. And now I flip back. I want Hillary. She made a chump out of Trump. She stumped him.
So let me ask you, why did you go Trump in the primary, and why are you coming the other way now?
Wow, you know, Trump wants to change some things that are not really changeable anymore. I mean, they've been like they are for so long that they need to stay that way, and actually it was the pro-life, pro-choice deal that really threw me, because I got raped at 16 and pregnant, and I married my rapist.
Oh, my goodness.
So you see, how many women are going to go to that extreme to prevent bastardry? Not very many. And if you read your New Testament, it says right in there, it is better to have never been born than to have been born a bastard. That's New Testament, baby.
All right. Well, geez. I'm almost speechless.
Yeah, my heart goes out to you for
yes,
what
Diane.
You've
Thank
certainly
you.
Suffered, and no one should be assaulted, and I would say no one should feel that they're obligated to marry someone who's assaulted them to prevent the birth of a child that may not have married parents at the time of them being born.
One of the many issues that's had a very thorough airing this campaign is this idea of what constitutes abuse, assault, and consent, wherever you stand in your politics.
Yeah, I mean, Donald Trump, like I wrote in this week's From the Editor, I mean, the way that we vilify women who report sexual assault and unwanted touching has got to change in this country. It's unacceptable. One in six women will be the victim of an attempted or completed rape in their lifetimes, according to RAIN. And these kind of statistics say something very disturbing about our culture. And when women have the bravery to come forward and tell what's most certainly the most terrible memory from their lives, then they get treated horribly for it. That is appalling.
It's interesting to hear the caller, Diane, say that she is flipping her vote back in the fall to Hillary Clinton, and she hinted in part it had to do with some of these issues. Lindsay?
Yeah, I think these are issues that most women, they're very important to women. And I think that before, it wasn't as clear where Donald Trump stood on it until more recently. I mean, I know toward the beginning of the election, he was saying, you know, he is pro-life. But, you know, there are old interviews of him saying he's very much pro-choice. So I think people, it's same with the sort of LGBT issues, people feeling like Trump didn't, you know, he didn't really care. But, you know, once he really was trying to get the Republican nomination, he did end up sort of he said he would even try to overturn the Supreme Court ruling. So things like that, people are now realizing, okay, he isn't as in the middle or moderate about some of these things as maybe you once thought he was.
And if you're just tuning in, we're taking a look at the top stories of the week with our Rockin' Friday Media Roundtable. It's 549-2937. As we move on to talk about another big story from the week, controversy over Amendment 1. Did you hear about this? Earlier in the week, leaked audio published by the Miami Herald appears to confirm what opponents have been saying all along, that the utilities industry attempted to deceive voters into supporting restrictions on the expansion of solar power in the state by portraying Amendment 1 as a pro-solar amendment. Sal Nuzzo, a vice president at the James Madison Institute in Tallahassee, was recorded saying this strategy was the real deal. Let's listen.
Solar polls very well. To the degree that we can use a little bit of political jujitsu and take what they're kind of hitting us on and use it to our benefit, either in policy and legislation or in constitutional referendums, if that's the direction we want to take, use the language of promoting solar and kind of put in these protections for consumers that kind of choose not to install rooftop.
Okay, so that's Sal Nuzzo laying bare the strategy behind Amendment 1. We also spoke with Stephen Smith, who heads up the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. Here's what he had to say.
To hear him literally arrogantly bragging about this on the audio tape as if they had already won, and so clearly saying this is something that is polls very high, it's very popular, but then using this term political jiu-jitsu, where we're actually going to use this against voters, something they want, we're going to turn around and use that against them.
Okay, so Ryan Bank, our own reporter, has been covering this. Now, the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy and others that are urging a no vote on Amendment 1, they're saying this audio proves that Amendment 1 is really trying to leave the impression that it's pro-solar, but in reality, it's undercutting attempts to allow third-party sales of rooftop solar in Florida.
Right. And so I think it's worthy to mention, too, that Sal Nuzzo and the James Madison Institute don't have a direct connection necessarily to the Amendment 1 effort. The Amendment 1 effort... it isn't to say there aren't indirect connections. So the Amendment 1 effort is largely funded by utilities. About $22 million of funding for the campaign has been donated by utility companies. And one of those utility companies is Gulf Power. And one of the CEO or the director of Gulf Power actually sits on the JMI board. So there are a lot of these indirect connections, and JMI actually also did a study where it was a hypothetical study that looked at the effect of the proposed amendment that didn't actually get go through from the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy that would have expanded solar subsidies. And it was a hypothetical study that said that it would be shifting a cost burden of about $1 billion onto lower income utility users. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of these indirect connections that JMI has. JMI is sort of the free market kind of right-leaning think tank in Tallahassee. Now, this is something that the opponents of Amendment 1 have been saying since Amendment 1 was trying to collect signatures. They have been saying that this is a deception, that this is a dirty trick that's being used to fool voters who are in favor of solar into kind of voting away their right to lease and sell solar to their neighbors. And the problem here is that we are so close to this election already. And this amendment is already polling so well. I mean, some St. Leo polls for the last 3 months had it polling at above 80% for Republicans, Democrats, and Independents. And largely that has to do with the title of the amendment. And I think a lot of people just look at the first portion of the amendment, which gives you the right to use solar, which already exists in Florida, and they don't read the second portion of the amendment, which is the right to refuse subsidizing solar users. So it's kind of hard to see how this is going to actually affect the election.
John is along Atlantic Boulevard. He has some comments about Amendment 1. Hi, John. Good morning.
Hey, Melissa. Good to talk with you.
You too.
I couldn't agree more with what was just stated. I voted by mail already, and when I got my ballot and actually read the language, I was appalled because I know exactly, you know, who's funding this, you know, initiative. It is the power industry. And we do know the reason why, and it was just stated, so that they don't have to buy back excess solar that's created by individuals who want to convert to solar and have extra energy. And the language is so deceptive that I don't see any way that it can't pass, and it's unfortunate. And absent some, you know, group that can really mount a public awareness campaign over the last, you know, 18 days going in, and really people are already voting, so it's, you know, problematic already. This is going to pass, and it's just a shame because it is absolutely, you know, a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Thanks, John. You know, the polling reflects that, Tim Gibbons.
Yeah, the thing is, this doesn't right now actually affect most people. The fraction of people who have rooftop solar is just minuscule. Most people are just kind of, yeah, solar's good, and they're not engaged with the issue beyond saying, reading the title of the amendment and going, yeah, it sounds like a good idea. Mm-hmm. So it's an uphill battle for those opposed to it because it's hard to engage with people to kind of the level of technical knowledge that they have to really delve into it. Arguably, if you're voting, you should put in that work to understand the amendment, but you know, I don't think people do.
And by the way, there are other amendments on the ballot besides Amendment 1, Amendment 2, the medical marijuana amendment, and some others. So when you go to vote, try to study up on the amendments.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. First Amendment experts Wednesday questioned whether some Duval County School Board members violated open meetings law This is when they called a recess Tuesday to discuss board members' behavior behind closed doors. WJCT's own Lindsay Kilbride has been covering this. And does the school board need a timeout, Lindsay?
It certainly seems. Well, they did. They took one.
Yeah, they actually did take one. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they've been having issues for a while now. We know that. And I think at the meeting, well, I don't think they know, they made a more strategic plan to get mediation, sort of like a three-tiered plan. So they'll have a mediator, which they're trying to lock one down now. They're also wanting to go to this school board association training program. That's kind of it's like a two-part. It's like a retreat, and mediators will come and work with them at the school board also. And they're also looking to identify some locals who can help them work things out. So they are trying to tackle this, although it has not happened yet.
And you've reported on everything from complaints, one board member complaining to another about their facial expression. I mean, after all of the drama with this governing body, this has to have observers shaking their heads.
Yeah, I think there's two parts to this. Obviously, it's getting petty and a little bit personal, which and it's been personal for a while now. And so that's not good. It's not good to watch your leaders of the education system locally arguing about petty things like this. But I think on the other side, we have to think about what they're representing. Duval is very diverse. The people on the school board are very diverse. And I think like the other extreme that you don't want either is everyone being very monochromatic and agreeing on everything, because there are very different needs in Duval County. And that really shows with their conversation that that they are trying to represent their constituents. And sometimes they do get very passionate about it, and it ends up resulting in arguments, and then those arguments get personal, which is the bad part. But I don't think it's good for them to agree on everything that they're talking about, because then why? What are they you know, what's the point of workshopping things?
Sure.
The stop staring at me reminded me of like summer vacation when I was a kid.
Your knee is touching mine in the back seat of the car.
At some point,
Dad, make him stop.
Board chairman is like, I'm drawing a line right here. I have to turn this car around.
I will turn this car around right now. Speaking of cars, it's our look at strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous doings from around the state from the week. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material, which makes us so happy. Actually, it doesn't. It's kind of depressing. Here it is for you right now. Only in Florida. Now, only in Florida does a man find a 6-foot-long snake popping out of the hood of his car as he's driving down the freeway. Tim Makwa of Clearwater says he was heading home on U.S. Highway 19 in Dunedin when the snake appeared on his windshield. Makwa immediately pulled into a Walmart parking lot and got video on his phone of the long black snake slithering around on the hood. He says he might have picked it up at the Weekiwachee State Park over the weekend, but he's not sure.
Nope.
Speaking of Walmart, only in Florida does a man face charges of trying to shoplift $1,500 worth of cologne from the low-cost superstore. 49-year-old Leopoldo Becerra faces a charge of grand theft. Police say surveillance video from a Walmart in Port St. Lucie showed Becerra stuffing perfume into a luggage bag. He then walked out with the stolen merchandise and sped off in a black Mercedes.
60% of the time, it works every time.
I knew I could count on you guys for a good one-liner to close this out. Have a wonderful weekend. And thank you, Tim Gibbons, Claire Goforth, Tessa Duval, Ryan Bank, and Lindsay Kilbride.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. In the final debate, Donald Trump refuses to say whether he'll accept the election results. North Carolina officials investigate the firebombing of Republican Party headquarters, and a police chief's organization apologizes for historical mistreatment of minorities.
At 10 o'clock on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Election day is right around the corner, and the candidates are going head-to-head.
I don't believe that Hillary has the stamina.
Why won't he release his tax return?
In debate after debate.
I have a feeling that by the end of this evening, I'm going to be blamed for everything that's ever happened.
Why not?
We don't know what will happen, yeah. But NPR's election team will be there with fact-checking and analysis to help you make sense of it all. Listen every day.
Here on 89.9 WJCT.
Classical music is available 22 hours a day on WJCT 89.9 FM HD2. Find out how you can listen to classical music by calling 358-6390. Enjoy classical music day or night on 89.9 HD2.
Hi, I'm John Braun. I'm an emergency planner for the city of Jacksonville, Florida. Individuals with special needs should register annually for assistance with evacuation to shelters. Visit jacksready.com for more information and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
This segment is brought to you by Colo CSX Data Center Hosting Solutions.
Welcome back. Well, it's a brilliantly funny exploration of our wild and wacky Sunshine State from the man who knows it best, Pulitzer Prize winner and New York Times bestselling author Dave Barry, who says, you just never know what will happen next in Florida, although we've learned by now that at any minute, something will. Barry defends his homeland in his new book, Best State Ever. Take a listen. Dave Barry, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me on.
And you've spent many years defending your homeland, Florida, to much hilarity. Now you've compiled all of it in this book, and it's, I think, by turns hilarious and excruciating for Florida residents to read. But it must have been fun for you to write this and put this together. How did you draw upon the source material? Because, of course, there's no shortage of material.
Yeah, well, it started, I live in Miami. I've been here 30 years, and for a long time, Miami was kind of the joke, but not so much Florida. And I was sort of used to defending Miami, even though pretty much every bad thing anybody ever says about Miami is true. And I even had bumper stickers put up once that said, come back to Miami, we weren't shooting at you. But then with the 2000 election, the whole state of Florida sort of became the butt of jokes. We were unable to figure out who we'd voted for. I don't know if you remember that night, but...
Yeah, oh yeah, I was here.
Gore was leading, and Bush was leading, and for a little while, William Shatner was in the lead. You know, we had no idea whom we'd voted for. So Florida sort of became the joke state that, from then on, really, and then this whole Florida man thing on the internet.
Yeah.
So... I decided to write a book defending the state and pointing out that a lot of yes, there's a lot of weirdness here and a lot of insane people, a lot of stupid people.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the time, anyway, they're not from here. I mean, a lot of people aren't from Florida. They come down here to commit weird acts in Walmarts and whatever. So the part of the book is that, and then part of it is a kind of a love letter to the state. I traveled around to a bunch of places, some of them pretty obscure, some of them kind of old Florida tourist attractions, but things that were really just purely Florida places and that you wouldn't find somewhere the other state, and wrote about them. And a lot of the book is that.
Yeah. I mean, you talked about everything from the skunk ape to the weeky-watchy mermaids and obviously Disney World, but some other attractions, too, that are just so kitschy and strange that you would only find here.
Yes, and I'm talking about strange, one of the stranger ones, I went to a town called Casadega, which is north central Florida, and it is one of the creepiest, weirdest places I've ever been to in my life.
Did you get a reading? I got a psychic reading there once.
It's a spiritual, they call themselves the spiritual capital of the world. Everybody there is a psychic or a medium.
Mm-hmm.
You know, And I stayed at the Casadega Hotel. This was right before Halloween, which is a kind of a especially creepy time there. And went up the street and had a reading gun, and it was a bizarre experience. Partly because the woman kept looking behind me. The woman, she was a medium, she said, you know, she was in touch with the dead. And, you know, we'd be sitting here in this kind of darkened living room with candles burning and New Age music playing in the background. And she'd go, "Oh, I see. Thank you." And I'd go, "What?" She'd go, "I wasn't talking to you."
So, she was talking to someone who came through for you.
Somebody, yeah. Except that whoever it was didn't really know very much about me.
Aww.
I had a lot of trouble finding any spirits who had any real connection with me. I also got a reading done for my dog, Lucy.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't have my dog with me, but they can do a reading with... They get your dog's aura from a photograph. So I have a picture of Lucy on my phone, and they took a picture of my picture and then put it through this printer that made this like rainbow pattern, which they told me was Lucy's aura. And I didn't know Lucy had an aura. Lucy has a smell sometimes. But I never know.
Okay, so Cass
and they did this reading with Lucy where they said that my mother, who is deceased, came and played with Lucy every night. Which struck me as pretty funny if you knew my mom, that she would, you know, visit Florida for that purpose. But anyway, it was interesting.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you a little bit about our corner of the state, North Florida, which is very different from Miami.
Yeah, you're really more like the South than the North, aren't you?
In a lot of ways, yeah.
I mean, you're north of Florida, way north of us, but down here we have like... Well, I live in Miami, which is basically Latin America. I mean, my joke is I moved here in 1986 from the United States. But then a little north of us, Fort Lauderdale, especially Boca, that area, it's, you know, everybody's from New York.
Right.
New Jersey, Long Island. And then if you go west over to Naples, everybody's from Ohio or Michigan. But when you get up toward you guys, it's the real South back up that way.
And what do you think that says about Florida?
Well, it's just that we're not one state. That is always, I think, as long as I've been here, been true. Floridians, I guess there are some older, you know, folks born and raised and whatever, who view themselves primarily as Floridians. But down here, especially, and I think much of the state, Orlando, a lot of the fast-growing areas, people live in Florida, but they don't identify as Floridians the way people from like Missouri identify as Missourians, or from Indiana identify as Indianans. I think in Florida, it's like we're here. It's a weird place. It's warm. The weather's nice sometimes, but there's a lot of strange people here, and I'm still sort of connected with where I came from.
Right. So. Yeah, there are definitely more people up here who have that sort of native Floridian identification.
Right, right. And it may be why the two ends of the state do not get along all that well. I mean, you know, politically and I guess maybe culturally, it's just like I know that when we from the way deep South Florida drive all the way up there, you know, we feel like we're in a whole different world. And then, you know, for one thing, you folks are nice and polite. We're not used to that. You probably, I'm guessing you signal your turns.
Yeah, actually, most of the time. They don't do that in Miami so much, do they?
In Miami, that's viewed as a sign of weakness.
Ah, I see.
My line about Miami is that when you get here, you think nobody knows the law of driving, and then after a while you realize everybody is driving according to the law. Of his or her individual country of origin.
So. Exactly. You know, well, and you write so hilariously about these types of things, and you have for so many years. You're such a beloved writer and columnist and book author. Do you feel like you'll ever exhaust this subject?
Florida, no, because, first of all, it's a nuclear reactor of weirdness. I mean, the strange things just keep happening here. And the other reason is new people keep showing up, which is part of the reason why strange things keep happening. But we're up to 20 million people. We're the third biggest state now in population. And you just have a mixture of people down, especially down the southern end, it's volatile and it produces news constantly. So if you're in my business of looking for humor to write about, you don't have to worry about it ever running out. It never will, I don't think.
That's good news for you. Good news for us as we get to read your stuff. Dave Barry, such a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
That's Dave Barry. His new book, Best State Ever, is on sale now and in a moment. Mary Chapin Carpenter, that's next. From the panhandle to the peninsula, the Sunshine State's politics are as hot as the weather. Trump versus Clinton, the race for the U.S. Senate, new political boundaries and familiar issues. Join 89.9 every Friday at 1 p.m. for Decision Florida. Let your voice be heard.
Box full of letters bound up neatly with some twine. Each one was like a diamond. Now the jewel is lost to time. My reward is in the north.
Welcome back. Well, five-time Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter and Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame inductee Mary Chapin Carpenter is on the road this year. She's performing songs from her new 14-album catalog and songs from her new record, The Things That We Are Made Of. Now, over the course of her acclaimed 30-year career, Mary Chapin Carpenter has sold more than 14 million records. She comes to the Florida Theater next Tuesday night. She joins us now on the phone with a preview. Mary Chapin Carpenter, a pleasure. Good morning.
Good morning.
And I have to tell you, I've been a fan for decades. It's so exciting that you're coming to Jacksonville to debut this new album, The Things That We Are Made Of. It sounds wonderful. Can you tell us a little bit about the new music?
Well, thank you, Melissa. I appreciate that so much. It's always hard to just try to sum up in a few words, you know, what an entire album is about. But I will say that I wrote it the way I've written every record, which is to take a chunk of time. And I started writing the songs about almost 5 years ago now. And I just like to take my time.
Yeah.
And I certainly feel that's connected to some of the themes on the record, in the sense that I think as one gets older, you realize more and more how important it is to take your time. And it's perhaps a bit of wisdom that you're just not able to have when you're younger. And that's the irony of it, of course.
Sure. And it's my understanding that some of the songs were inspired by some challenging experiences in your life, even a near-death experience. Is that right? NPR reporting that?
This record, not so much. I did have a health scare a number of years ago, and the record that I made in the years following that had more to do with the idea of that experience. But this one, I'd like to feel that I have moved beyond that.
Right. So there are some hopeful songs, and the maturity in your voice, you know, when I listen to the new music, I feel the wisdom and the nuance in your songs. But of course I loved your earlier work too, you know, back in the era when you were doing songs like Passionate Kisses. And I know that when you perform at the Florida Theater, you're going to really thrill fans with that whole catalog. It must be gratifying for you to come out and hear the fans. They want to hear those familiar songs, but I know they're excited to hear the new music too.
Well, you know, just the very idea that I can walk out on a stage and start something up and people recognize it, to me, it's the greatest thrill in the world. So to have people, you know, welcoming new music, but certainly the old music, that's thrilling to me. And I never get tired of playing the songs, ever. I never get tired of touring. It's part of what I do, and this year has been a whirlwind in terms of releasing a new record and being around, going around the world. And actually, the last number of years, I've been touring like a madman. So,
wow,
I'm very lucky in that regard.
We've got a quick call for you. He says he's related to you. It's Dennis Carpenter out at the Beaches. Dennis, we're short on time. Go ahead quickly.
Yeah, I just wanted to say hello to my cousin and congratulate her. She, we've never met, but. The last name is not the trick. We are cousins through her Chapin line. We share an eighth great grandfather, and I just wanted to congratulate her and tell her I'm looking forward to being there at her show.
Nice!
Looking forward to theater.
Thanks for that call.
So thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's always pretty amazing when people pop up and you find your connection. So thanks for that call.
Absolutely. You've so many fans out there, and we're going to close with a little more of your wonderful music. Mary Chapin Carpenter, 5-time Grammy Award winner and Hall of Fame inductee at the Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame. The new record is The Things That We Are Made Of, and of course you perform Tuesday night at the Florida Theater. Thanks so much for being with us, and have a great show.
Thank you. We're looking forward to it. Thanks.
And that's our show today. Thanks for listening. Diane Reams up next. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back Monday at 9. Have a great weekend and enjoy the music.
With your suitcase by the handle, holding everything you need. Are you going or are you coming? Walking slow and running. Towards somebody or from some, trade your longing in for speed. And the freedom to be a stranger is a bargain that's ours alone. Sometimes you just wanna be someone else, unencumbered and unknown. From departure to arrival, what does it mean to travel? And from taking off to landing, you could feel your heart expand. You walked halfway down Manhattan till you met the Brooklyn Bridge. And in a 2 a.m. transmission from a high wire at precision, how the skyline behind you glistened as if someone pulled a...
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.